kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe, and my cats are making a whole bunch of noise behind me, but Tim Ekibis is here. Tim, how are you doing?
That was a lot of noise. Hey, I'm good. I don't own cats, so...
I don't know what the fuck they're doing.
It's an audio podcast, so you can't see what they're doing.
Good news, listeners. I can't tell either.
Yeah, so we're all in the same boat. Yeah, no, I just have dogs, and sometimes I'm down here in my basement, and I hear them upstairs barking and running around, and I wonder what they are doing up there, you know?
They're living life.
Yeah, it just makes me worry. I'm like, is someone trying to break into my house right now? I think they'd be barking more urgently if that was the case, but that's my hope.
Man. That would happen to me. I would get robbed while recording a podcast. That's like my luck.
I mean, that must have happened to someone like Twitch streaming at some point, right? I can't believe that hasn't happened.
I mean, we've had people swatted on stream, which is scary as shit.
Yeah, I mean, that's by design, right? Is like, oh, I'm going to swat this person while they're streaming.
That shit's scary.
Yeah.
I worry about that happening to me. Like, there's a door right next to me. They could kick that fucker in and just, like, guns drawn on me right away.
Yeah. Though, on the upside, I don't think we're important enough for anyone to swat. I guess you never know. You could get a casual swatting.
I don't know. We've had a whole bunch of new followers lately. One of our, Jacob does our Facebook stuff. One of his shit posts actually got a lot of traction.
We're just assuming that one of these fine people is going to swat us now.
I mean, we're assuming the eventually.
Worst. You have to prove yourself to be good people first before we trust that we will go unswatted.
I just like that all of our posts have, like, I don't know, 40, 50 reaches, and because Facebook sucks and doesn't let anybody see anything. And then some bullshit about a GameStop orgy has like 30,000 shares. Not shares, 30,000 views.
Oh, and over 100 shares. Yeah, that buzzed by my feed as well. I remember seeing that.
Buzzed by everyone's, apparently.
I guess you just got to know your audience, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you do. But we have a hell of a show lined up today. We have...
Hell of a show.
A whole shitload of games to talk about. Like, this might be our most star-studded and packed review episode ever.
Wow, really?
Look at your lineup.
Look at me. Yeah, no. Oh, you mean in terms of the content, not the reviewers. I was going to say, like... Yeah, no.
We got all the studs on this show.
I have three pretty sizable reviews coming to a head here all at once in the last week of February.
Yeah, you got a nice month.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you ready to dive into these? Should we get the show on the road?
I am ready to go. Let's do it.
All right. First game to talk about tonight is called the Yakuza Remastered Collection, developed by RGG Studio, published by Sega. The complete package runs $59.99 and includes Yakuza 3, 4, and 5 remastered. Yakuza 3 released back in August of 2019 for $24.99. Yakuza 4 released in October for $24.99. And Yakuza 5 remastered just released February 11th for $24.99. Celebrate the saga with the beautifully remastered Yakuza 3, 4, and 5 with restored content and updated localization in 1080p and 60 frames per second. Experience the complete Yakuza collection on one console for the first time in history. We got the latter half of the series with this package. Tell us about it, Tim.
Oh my gosh, that's a lot of Yakuza. Holy crap.
It is a lot of Yakuza.
It's a lot of Yakuza. So already, if you're looking to get in, this is a deal, because you're saving $15 off the top if you buy the full package, if you've been patient and not purchasing them individually. Or I suppose I think you could have pre-ordered the full thing and then gotten them unlocked. It was super weird when I was like, putting in the code on PS4, because initially it was like, oh, it's the collection. And I'm like, where is it? And then it was like Yakuza 3. And I'm like, oh, is this one of those weird things where I have to download Yakuza 3 and then get the others as like DLC for it or something stupid like that? I don't know. There was a minor moment of panic. Anyways, I have never played a Yakuza game before this review, which makes me either the best or worst person to do it. So I really can't say like how, having not played the originals, this is the PlayStation 3 trilogy, ostensibly. 1 and 2 were PS2 games. Which I did own at some point. I don't think I still do. I think I sold them at some point. Which have been got their own remakes. 6 came out on PS4. 0 has been out. The series seems to have picked up some more traction and attention over the past couple of years.
Debuting on Xbox this week. We got Yakuza 0 on Xbox finally.
Debuting on Game Pass.
Yeah, baby, Game Pass.
Yeah, we made it. This yeah, drink.
6 minutes, we made it.
Well, it's almost. I'm gonna be downloading it for sure, and checking it out. I can't say how much better these look than the PS3 originals. I could certainly tell that they aren't like PS4 games just from like the quality of the like textures and environments. Like everything looks nice and sharp, and the characters move around. It is. Well, 60 frames per second, so, everything looks nice, but you can definitely tell it's like, oh, okay, this is, a little bit older. Not, like, tragically so, but you can tell.
Yeah, Zero and the Kiwami games, weren't those completely remade for the PS4 originally?
Well, the Kiwami games,
then
these yes,
are And then these are just remasters.
Yes, these are just remasters, not full remakes. So they're just remasters. They're upping the textures, they are, making it sharper, 1080p, better frame rate, just looks better all around. I am not knocking how they look. I'm just saying. You're not gonna be fooled into thinking that these are like modern video games. I spent most of my time playing five of these three. I mean, it's 3, 4, and 5. One might look at these and be like, "Why? If I'm new to the Yakuza series, why the hell would I start with any of these?" And I might say that too, when it sounds like Zero might be a better place to start, or Kiwami 1 might be a better place to start. And of course, with Zero coming out on Game Pass, that's the first place for an Xbox owner to start, is there. But 5 does seem like a good place to jump in, and I think that's why I kind of had the best time with that one. Like going into 3 and 4, like it's a continuous story throughout the entire series, following Kiryu and his travels and adventures through the Japanese crime scene, syndicate scene. But it's definitely like going into 3 and 4, it felt like, oh, I am starting in the middle of this and there is stuff going on. But 5 is a bit of a reset because Kiryu is moved away, changed his name, is hiding his identity. And basically trying to lay low and live a normal-ish life, and until he is inevitably picked back up into gangster shit again. But that, that kind of setup, that quiet setup, like he's working as a cab driver, which means coincidentally that you get to work as a cab driver a little bit too. So he's kind of just doing his own thing, and then the story comes to him, and you can kind of pick up like, okay, he has a connection with this guy and these people, and I had an easier time wrapping my head around everything as it started with Yakuza 5. These games are sort of, if you're unfamiliar, sort of Japan's answer to GTA a little bit, but it's more like an evolution of Shenmue, anybody? Hot sequel coming out or just came out? Shenmue 3 is out, right?
Yeah.
Right, yeah, Shenmue 3 is out.
Yeah, a couple months ago.
Like this is sort of like alternate universe, but still the same universe, Shenmue, in a way. And that as you play the game, like there's definitely quite a bit of just Japan slice of life stuff. And like doing mundane things. I'm sure this sounds very appealing, but you wake up at your apartment, then you have to walk to your job and You want to walk down the street, because if you run, you will attract the attention of thugs and be dropped into basically random combat scenarios, sort of like an RPG random battle. You know, there's a number of stores around. You can go in and buy Japanese food and beverage and such. Your side, like there are, of course, tons of side activities which involve, street racing. There is taxi driving, of course. There's like, there's a ramen shop mini game where this dude kind of cons you into like working his ramen stand during rush hour. But you just get dropped into these things, and there's some fun, like kind of goofy flavor to that stuff. Like when you're driving a taxi, it's not a crazy taxi by any means. It is a normal taxi. Like you get graded on how fast, like how good of a driver you are, like not stepping on the brakes too hard, not speeding up too fast, like using turn signals, not running into pedestrians, not running red lights, like adhering to the rules of the road. And for like a mini game, it's very elaborate and detailed, which is kind of what these games are about in a way. It is just like going a bit over the top with like not just like the world and the detail of it, but also like all the little side activities you can do too. Like the ramen mini game is about like how hard or soft someone wants their noodles cooked. And it gives you like this whole rundown of like why people might want their noodles like hard or cold and like what the cultural thing is. And it's just like really interesting. I found it really interesting in that you can get all this information. But at the heart of it, these are gangster stories about doing gangster shit. So, yeah, I mentioned you will sometimes get jumped by thugs on the street. And this is commonplace, like pretty much across all the games, like 3, 4, and 5. They kind of have their same basic idea here. And you get dropped into combat, and you'll have like a little kind of cordoned off area, and you will fight with guys, and you have combos and light attacks and strong attacks, and it all happens real time. It's not turn based or anything like that. You can grab guys, you can throw them into walls. As you beat dudes up, you earn experience, so that you can upgrade to get more moves, more health, more of your spirit bar, etc. It's kind of cool that like they don't have trees. They all like have the same upgrade system. These games are very similar. Is that they just have like 4 stats. It's like mind, like body, technique, something else. But like buying a point in them is like a different move at each level. So you don't really see the whole tree. You're not really planning out a build, but it's kind of cool where it's like, oh, I put a point into this to get like this one move, like a stronger power move or something like that. But then the next thing is something to do with grappling. And it just like was kind of fun just to see like what the next level would be. Cause it wasn't always just like a predictable, like, oh, punch stronger. Oh, kick stronger. Oh, do this stronger. It's like, oh no, now I have, you know, now I can do a finishing move when I slam a guy on the ground, or I can slam a guy on the ground, but then I can pick him up and body slam him, you know? it was just a cool progression that wasn't like super predictable that I enjoyed, going through. These games are very dramatic. they are not messing around with their story. Like they are all well, you know, shot and choreographed. Like it's not just talking heads. Like there is, you know, you want to think kind of along the lines of, like if you're more familiar with GTA, but you know, the scenes of characters talking have direction to them, and they are trying to tell a dramatic gangster story with them. So as far as I can tell, I think the voice acting is good. It's all in Japanese. This is all subtitled, so I hope you like reading subtitles. But the stories are interesting. It is interesting stuff. I was getting very into all of them. Or I was hooked by the stories in all of them. I was most hooked by 5, I guess I should say, just because of the setup of that. But yeah, it definitely, just kind of doing this breeze of the series just makes me fucking want to get into it. God damn it. You know, I never played one before, and just like playing 5, I'm like, yeah, I dig this. I get it now. I see why people are all about these games. It's kind of like, you know, how I was with Assassin's Creed at a certain point. Like, I get it. They're all like pretty similar, doing similar things. They all each have their own, you know, story and quirks and stuff. I should mention 4 and 5 have multiple playable characters equal to the number in the title of the game. So you will see some different perspectives as you go along in those games than just Kiryu. Yeah, but that, like, it is very convenient that Yakuza 0 is hitting Game Pass, because I've been thinking about checking that game out, and now I'm like, yeah, okay, I could definitely get into some Yakuza. They are pretty beefy games. I didn't get to the end of any of them because I don't have that much time on my hands, but they're like, I mean, like, if you're just going through the stories, like 3 and 4 are on the are a bit shorter. They're like around 20 hours. Yakuza 5 looks to be quite a bit longer, around like 40 hours.
Wow.
So you are definitely getting value out of it. And that's if you're just doing the story, but you will inevitably find yourself just kind of messing around.
Cooking noodles.
Yeah, cooking noodles, like running races, you know, doing the side stuff as you are wont to do in these games. But it's cool. And even if you are hesitant to go whole hog on these, like, I think I could recommend 5 on its own merits. I think it would be tough for someone to go into 3 and 4 cold turkey. But then, like, once you get into 5, then you're going to want to have the other ones anyway. So I don't know, man. Do you make that and for Yakuza fans, I guess, like, this is a no-brainer. Like, $60 for remastered versions of those. That seems like a good value there. Like, if you've just gotten in on, like, Kiwami or Zero or even Judgment, there's been a lot of Yakuza kind of good starting points over the past few years. So, yeah, it's a hell of a collection.
Yeah, and if you are a big collector, the physical edition of the game comes with a PS3 case for Yakuza 5, which never got a physical release.
That's
so
true. Yeah.
You finally get a case to put on your shelf without a disc in it.
But it's important that people look at it and they go, oh, you have Yakuza 5, right? Or
yes.
You yourself. Yeah.
Like the Shovel Knight box I have on my shelf. There's nothing in it. But people know what it is.
People know what it is. I actually have a Shovel Knight box with a game in it. Eventually, the third time I bought that game.
Good lord.
Finally had to get a box.
All right. Well, as it stands, these games are $25 each or $60 for the full package. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's certainly worth it. Like I said, yeah, it's a good value for a collection. It's definitely a buy it overall. If you are new to the series and like you don't want to drop $60 out on the gate, I would most recommend checking out 5. If this is what you're dead set on, where you're dead set on starting your Yakuza journey, number 5 would be, I think, the one to start with. And like I said, like, yeah, that's a big beefy game. You will get your 25 bones out of it for sure. But you know, if you're looking to get into the Yakuza collection, then maybe you, or the Yakuza series, then maybe you should just go ham and just get the whole thing. It's well worth it.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. Next game to talk about is Double Dragon and Kunio-kun Retro Brawler Bundle, developed and published by Arc System Works, released February 20th on Switch and PS4 for $39.99. And for some reason, it's not on Xbox, despite the
Sorry.
Fact that it exists in Japan.
Sorry.
We're proud to present you this compilation of 18 titles from the Double Dragon and Kunio-kun series. Tim, tell us about this collection.
Oh, man. Wowie zowie. Am I glad I didn't buy this on the Japanese eShop? Because it was definitely like crossed my mind. I think we might have even talked about it like back in the fall.
Yeah, I bought it on the Japanese Xbox store. So again, I have this game on Xbox.
But,
I just can't play it in English.
But yeah, that is kind of so. Yeah, the Double Dragon Kunio-kun Retro Brawler Collection. Like, what are you getting here? What is this thing? This is a collection of 18 NES games, sort of. NES games, so you're probably familiar with Double Dragon in that series. Well, you might be. I don't know. It's a pretty old series at this point. Double Dragon Neon's great. I know there's Double Dragon 4. That came out, like, what, last year or the year before?
Something like that.
So people, I think, know what Double Dragon is. Kunio-kun, if you are for some reason not familiar, and if you're listening to this podcast, you probably are because we review those games quite a bit, is the River City Ransom lineage here in the U.S., which led to, but these series are both kind of intertwined a little bit. They came from the same developer back in the 80s. And what is special about this collection is that it has all of the Famicom versions of the Kunio-kun games now translated for the first time in English. And that's pretty crazy because it also includes, in all told, six or seven games that we never got. I think six that we never got. And I'll explain here. But so what you get, brass tacks, is you get Double Dragon 1 through 3. You get both the NES and Famicom versions of Renegade, River City Ransom, which in Japan is Downtown Neketsu Showdown, something like that. You get both versions of Super Dodgeball, Famicom and NES, two versions of Super Dodgeball, and NES and Famicom versions of Crash and the Boys Street Challenge, as it was known here in the NES, in the US. I meant to pull this up so I wouldn't forget any of them. What you get on the Famicom, like the fully like 100% new side, well, I guess I should say that we're getting the unlocalized versions now of Renegade, RCR, Super Dodgeball, and Crash and the Boys. So Renegade, that's kind of the same-ish game. RCR, so it now, you know, they're wearing Japanese school uniforms. All of the food is Japanese and not Americanized. You're picking up yen. Like, a lot of the book names are different. It's just translated more directly rather than Americanized up and all. Words. Don't have them.
Been there.
Yeah. Crash and the Boys. So Crash and the Boys is actually the second game in that series. There is a first game. They are the, I think cross country is the sport that they are aping in there. Okay, there we go. Finally got up in front of me. Yeah, so Neketsu Renegade Kunio-kun, that's Renegade. Neketsu High School Dodgeball Club is Super Dodgeball. Downtown Neketsu Story is River City Ransom. And I think Crash and the Boys is Super Neketsu New Records The Distant Gold Medal, which is the sequel to Downtown Neketsu March Super Awesome Field Day. Super Awesome Field Day.
These names are incredible.
Oh, yeah. So yeah, Super Awesome Field Day, that is actually the first cross-country game, and Crash and the Boys was the Americanized release of the second one. So there's another game like that that I did not know. But it was pretty funny because I'm like, okay, it's a cross-country game, right? And you're just like running through people's like living rooms, backyards, like construction sites, and of course beating the shit out of each other. That is one thing that all these games have in common is regardless of their genre or theme, you can just beat the shit out of each other. One way or the other, you are just wrecking people. So yeah, the ones that we have never ever seen released here in America, there's two soccer games. There's Neketsu High School Dodgeball Club Soccer Story, and then there's Kunio-kun's Neketsu Soccer League. One of those was released over here as Nintendo World Cup Soccer. So we did get one of those, and that Nintendo World Cup Soccer isn't on this collection because I think Nintendo published it because it's literally Nintendo World Cup Soccer. But still, we get both soccer games. You get both cross-country games. You get Downtown Special Kunio-kun's historical period drama, which is a beat 'em up, but it's set in like medieval Japan. I could not make head nor tails of what the hell was going on in that game. We'll get to that in a second. You get Go Go Neketsu Hockey Club Slip and Slide Madness, which is a hockey game, which almost came out here, allegedly, and is awesome. This is like possibly the best hockey game on the NES. Like, I think the game is, I have the Famicom version and I played it quite a bit. And it is a super cool game. You go through the story mode and like you beat like other weird teams like the Kendo Club, and then you get the Kendo Club's gear and you're hitting people with kendo sticks. You take the cheerleader's cheerleader, so you got Kunio-kun running around in a skirt and stuff on the ice. It's great. It's a great game. It has a lot of personality. You get Neketsu Fighting Legend, which is a straight up arena fighting game. Obviously there's fighting in the fighting game. And there is Neketsu Street Basketball All Out Dunk Heroes, which is a street basketball game. Go figure. But yeah, again, just beating the crap out of each other. That game is interesting because, so along like with, you know, your usual, Like, so the basketball rims, sometimes they are three high on a level. So you'll like take a shot and it will go up through the top basket and then fall down through the next two, scoring every time. You can dunk. You can like sometimes the rim will break off the basket and you can't score anymore. if you shoot at your opponent's basket, you score points for them. It's wild. Like the stages are all like, one has a conveyor belt. One, the New York level has a subway. You run in one side and come out the other. It's crazy. So those are the games. But as a compilation, like, what are you, like, how are these games treated? What do you get? It's what's on this thing more outside of just like, okay, here's 18 ROMs, right? So most of the games, almost all of them, I think except the two Crash and the Boys ones, have a quality up mode, which for most games will reduce slowdown and or in sprite flicker, which is important because it makes games like Neketsu Fighting Legend playable. Because like I have also owned that Famicom cart and played it and been like, holy crap, my characters are like ghosts, just like flickering on and off the screen. But when you play it in quality up mode on this compilation, it's nice. And like, you see all the characters, there's no flicker, much more playable. Like playing quality up mode on Double Dragon NES, like that is the smoothest, nicest that game has ever played. It just feels like it plays faster and better. So most games at the base level, it will do that. There are some games that have additional like balance changes, or like in the case of the hockey game, I believe it has all the teams unlocked for versus mode at the start, so you don't have to unlock them, which is cool. Some of them have balance changes. It's a lot of cool stuff. Each game has like control explanations for what you can, you know, what all the moves are, which is important because you will have a considerable amount of moves and how to do special moves and stuff and such in all these games. Each game kind of has a synopsis. Because this is actually like, so when you look at the Kaneo-kun series, this is actually like an 11-game series in Japan. Like, one leads into the next one. Like, the last one that came out was the basketball one. And that was the last one released for NES. The game that preceded that was one of the soccer games. And, like, the story of the basketball game is that, like, Kaneo, like, goes to America, like, on vacation after winning the soccer league and then gets, like, wrapped up in this basketball tournament. Like, there actually is continuity, strangely, between them all.
That's cool.
Yeah. But you get all that in this. The buttons are fully, you know, remappable. Importantly, one of the things you can do is you can map. So you have like your NES control. So you have select, start, B, A. You can map B and A to one button. And that's important because in most of these games, hitting B and A at the same time as your jump, it's usually like punch, kick, jump or pass, shoot, jump, as the case may be. So you can actually map it out so that it's a three button game the way it always like kind of needed to be. Makes them a lot more playable when you don't have to worry about smashing two buttons at once just to jump in the air. you basically have a dedicated jump button, so that's really cool. What I would have liked to see
is an Xbox release.
No, that's not important to me personally.
Fuck you.
It's just the truth, man. That's what I'm here spitting. I would have liked to see, so SNK, the SNK 40th anniversary collection,
which is on Xbox, by the way.
Which is on Xbox. You can play on Xbox. That's actually like the best version of that game. It got like an extra game that like I think no other platform got. Definitive version on the Xbox. That is the like best retro compilation I've ever seen. Regardless of like what do you think of the quality of the games, but like the presentation of those games is incredible. And I, you know, it kind of spoiled me a little bit. And while this collection has all that stuff I just mentioned, which is great, what would have made it even better is if it had like cheat options. You know, setting up like infinite lives in Double Dragon, or just starting with your experience maxed out so you have all the moves. The way, you know, having like full replays of each game the way that SNK 40th does. So you can just sit and watch a game played through if you want.
Yeah, and SNK spoiled us in terms of compilations.
I mean, that compilation is so damn good. And like more, there's no like behind the scenes, like making of art or artifacts or anything packed onto this game. But that's like the highest of high tier. That's the most, that's A++ treatment. That is the gold standard for compilations. But even without that stuff, just having like, haven't they did 11 new like translations for this game, or for this release. That's 11. And it's not like half-assed. It's not just like, okay, we put overlays over the menu so you can find your way around. Like, no, they translated and like hacked up these ROMs to release them here in English. That is,
don't you think if they went through all that work, they should put it on as many platforms as they could?
I mean, I'm sure there is strong economical reasons why or why not to do that on the back end.
God damn it. I'm so pissed about this.
Like the quality up modes, for, you know, all of the, almost all the games on there is fantastic. And they do, you know, good stuff around the edges with the synopses of each game and the control, explanations as well. Whew.
Well, as it stands at $40, what's your thoughts on the on the Retro Brawler bundle?
Oh, it's a must buy. Like, oh my gosh, like I never thought I would see these games in English ever. And just like all of a sudden, you know, like what they announced this 3 weeks ago that it was coming to the US, and it's just like, oh yeah, we're just translating 11 games. Like, no big deal. Like, this is, you know, a fantastic opportunity to check out the history of this series, like we have not gotten to see here in the States. And, you know, obviously I have a history with this series, having made a River City Ransom movie, but my track record on the show is that I hold these games to a high standard. Like the last two I reviewed, the Melee Mach and that Stay Cool Kobayashi-san, those games did not make me happy. And this game makes me happy. So I am very happy with this collection. I should also say that, like, when, you know, some of these games are four player, some of these games are local. Well, I mean, there's no online play, but, you know, couch co-op is there. And that's great.
Those sounds like a good package.
It is. It's hell of a package. Hell of a package. I mean, like, yeah, if you're not into playing, You have a Switch and a PS4. Shut up.
I want it on Xbox.
But yeah, I mean, there's going to be some people that, like, you know, they don't care about NES games, and you probably don't care about this. But for those that are, like, it is a good collection, a very good collection. One of the best collections. Might say, yeah, second best behind SNK.
Nice. That is high praise.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you got one last game to talk about. This is, I hate these names. Undernight in Birth EXE : late open bracket CL-R close bracket. Like, how are you supposed to pronounce that? Undernight in Birth X late clur.
I don't know. The CLR, maybe that stands for something. Is that like, no, it's not the chemical symbol for chlorine. I don't know. Like, this is a revision on a revision on a revision of this game.
Yeah. So, developed by French Bread and Arc System Works, published by P-Cube and Axis Games, released February 20th on Switch and PS4 for $39.99. Control a deeper, darker fighting experience than ever before. Battle with 21 unique characters, including the all-new Londrika, with his original moves, story, stage, and music. Master devastating new combos and dazzling special attacks and online arcade story and training modes. Rule the night. Tim, tell us about it.
Landraka, who's this guy? Anyways, yeah.
Landrekia, so maybe. I don't know. These names, these friggin' names, man. Japanese games.
Yeah, these anime games, and they're like, what are you even saying? Just use numbers or something, man. Not to tell you what to do with your games, but come on, you're killing me here. Yeah. So Undernight, woo. This game has been around for a while, apparently. Because I feel like I didn't start hearing about it until, like, just a few years ago. Like, out of fighting game circles. Like, oh yeah, there's this Undernight game. And then, like, a couple years ago, I reviewed Blaze Blue Tag Battle, and there were some Undernight characters in there. And I was like, oh, it's these Undernight dudes that I keep hearing about. So finally, here I am, actually finally playing an Undernight In Birth game under 19 birth exe colon late open bracket cl dash r close bracket. Yeah, and I also never got around to playing French Red's previous game, Melty Blood, which I heard, you know, much ado about in the 2000s. That was a PS2 and PC series. Never played that. So yeah, anyways, Undernight. I kept hearing that, like, Undernight was pretty fun, and it turns out that Undernight is pretty darn fun. And what I liked most about it, and just picking up and, like, playing this, is, you know, I enjoy BlazBlue, and I have enjoyed other Arxis, you know, like the Persona fighting games. I enjoyed BlazBlue Tag Battle. But this BlazBlue Cross Tag, that's what that game was. Anyways. This felt like the most straightforward of those games to pick up and play. Like, the most recent one that I reviewed was BlazBlue Central Fiction, I think, Special Edition last year on the Switch. And playing like that, and playing Guilty Gear, like Zerd, when I was playing that, Revelator, you know, whenever that was, I was like, these games are great. These are great, fun fighting games. And it was just like making my head spin a little bit, because it felt like every single character in those games had their own, like, specific, like, I mean, it's cool to have characters that have their own mechanics. It makes the characters very different. But it just became overwhelming at a point when it's like every character seems to have, like, its own meter and its own, like, dongle to, like, keep track of. Like, you got to keep track of where, like, how many of these, like, shots are, like, in your gun or whatever. Like, you're building stocks to do these other attacks, and it kind of became, like, overwhelming at a certain point. Like, the number, like, just how each character was just so different from one another, and there was just, like, so many mechanics, and it was like, I don't even know what's going on. Like, the game is yelling at me all the time about cancels and counters and this, that, and the other thing. But this game I found to be a lot more straightforward to just, like, pick up and play and start having fun. Like, right off the bat, like, when I pick up a character, I wasn't like, oh, okay, I need to dive into the move list and start, like, figuring out, like, what all their mechanics are. The characters are similar enough in, like, their execution, I felt like, that I could more easily go from one to the next and just kind of figure out, like, oh, okay, does this character use quarter circles? Does this character use charges? Like, take a quick glance at their move list and then just kind of go with it. And then start figuring things out from there and figuring out who I liked and didn't like. And I really appreciate that. Like, I really appreciate that. After a lot of the anime fighters I've played over the course of the past decade, just to, like, pick up this one and be like, ah, okay. Like, you know, I'm not playing at the highest level, and nor will I ever be. But it felt good just to be like, okay, I can figure out how to, like, get moves coming out with every character. Like, I can do some basic juggles, like, bouncing people off the walls, setting up, like, super combos. And this feels good, just, like, right off the bat. Like, I don't feel like I need to take a ton of time to figure out each character's mechanics and moves. I can just get in there and kind of jump around between characters and feel like I'm doing stuff and having a good time. I ended up playing a lot of this game in versus against my kid, who's not 5 years old yet, over the weekend. And we had a lot of fun. He really liked it. He took a few matches off me. absolutely. So he was having a fun time just picking up and going. And yeah, like, that's, like, kind of the bottom line of my experience, is just that, like, I had a lot of fun playing Undernight. And it seems like an easy game that, like, you know, when I have people over that aren't super into fighting games, but like to play fighting games, I could be like, here, this is the anime fighter we're going to play. Like, I think we'd be lost if I, you know, as impressive as Guilty Gear Revelator is, and as much as there is going on in BlazBlue, like, I think, like, this might be the one to get more people playing. So on this package, this now most recent revision of this game that originally released in 2012, so 8 years later, first time coming to the Switch, I believe. What the hell is that word, Tim? I don't know. So yeah, this game has, like, all the modes. You're run-of-the-mill. It has, like, everything you're looking for out of a fighting game in terms of modes. You got your arcade, your story, your time, your score attack, your training modes, your tutorials, your mission modes, your options, your, like, your online play. Of course, I did do some online matches, and it seemed good, seemed solid, if like a little bit sluggish. But I was also being that guy and playing in handheld mode, which is a massive no-no. but, you know, I got into matches. I was getting matched up. There was people playing, so that was there. But it felt good, looked good, was responsive. Something else that impressed me was the tutorials. They have it broken down in a couple of ways. So they have it broken down so where you can go into tutorials like at different like skill levels. So there's like novice, intermediate, veteran, and then master level tutorials, I guess I should say techniques is what you're learning there. So, you know, it'll run you through the basic mechanics of the game. And it was funny because like going in, I was kind of like, oh, this game's not as complicated as I think it is. Like, no, there's plenty of complicated stuff. Like once you start looking under the hood and once you start going through those tutorials, like there is a lot of stuff that you can learn and go pretty deep in this game. But I appreciate how you could approach it as either like, okay, well, I'm just going to start with the novice stuff and learn all the basics first. Or you can do it by difficulty level. But what I did, you can also have it broken down to just like a big list where it just lists out all the tutorials in one big tall list. There's probably like 50 of them. I'm not even kidding. But it then will break them down by like, okay, here is like movement tutorials. Here is attacking. Here is defense. Here is throwing. Here's just like 10 tutorials just regarding how to do throws in this game. Damn. Though a lot of those are like advanced, like, oh, like teching out of them, like countering throws, throwing in the air, doing this, that, and the other thing. But I appreciate breaking them down in like that finally, because I feel like a lot of times when fighting games, even when they have good tutorials, like I end up slogging through a lot of stuff because I don't want to miss anything. So I'll start with the novice stuff and it's like, okay, yes, I know how to move forward. I know how to move backwards. I know how to push punch. I know what the different buttons do. I don't need to do this part. So I appreciate this, like listing them all out so I could skip those and be like, well, okay, like what is, you know, this special? Like what is this like frame canceling mechanic? What is this here? And just like, it'll just say like, it'll have the description right next to it. And it's like a lot of small text on the page, but still it got me to go through there and be like, okay, and pick and choose what I wanted to work on and what I wanted to learn. And that's really good. I really like that. I would be happy with more games doing like breaking it down that finely. I think a good game for people to get into if they're new to fighters and new to anime fighters. Like it'll lay all that stuff out for you, and then you can take it and then apply it in the mission mode, which mission mode is, you know, it gives you like, okay, do this combo and then you do that combo, and it's like training you up on the basics of the game. So like once you've completed a mission, all the missions for a character, you should be pretty good to go in there and start messing stuff up, or you could just not do that and just go in there and have fun. That's it. So this was the Switch version, I guess I should say. I think I did already say that.
Yeah, because you were playing in handheld.
Yeah, playing in handheld. Yeah, so yeah, looks good, plays well on the Switch. Looked good, you know, played it on the TV with the kid. Both had a great time with it. So yeah, I was pretty happy with this game, finally checking it out. Like, it lived up to, like, that little murmur of good things that I kept hearing from people about it. It's a cool fighting game. I like it.
Nice. So $40, your verdict?
Yeah, I think that's... I'm sorry, I have to recommend all these games I played tonight. They were all good. Bad news for your wallet. I played a bunch of good games these past few weeks. If you're looking for a fighter, and like even if you usually kind of turn your nose up at anime stuff, this one might be the one to check out. Like I certainly have a tenuous relationship with the anime genre of video game and how much they may or may not get on my nerves, but I really dug this one. I kind of didn't play much of the story mode because I knew that wouldn't be my cup of tea, but it's I liked it. I liked the characters. I liked just had a lot of fun. I just had a lot of freaking fun. That's it.
Which is what matters when you're playing games.
Video games are supposed to be fun, but it, like, you know, my kid was like begging me. We played a little bit, I think, like last Friday and last Saturday. He's like, can we play more of the fighting game? Can we play more of the fighting game? And we played fighting games before, but he really liked this one. He loves playing fighting games, even if I usually trash him. But I think he liked it because there was a couple characters where he was really like beating the smack out of me with.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Tim, always a pleasure having you on. We're going to venture on over to our party cast. We're going to get Cole Purnell and Chris in here, and I think Dark Mika is going to be joining as well. Another party.
Clusterfuck incoming.
Pretty much. Close to it. But thank you as always for doing this. Do you have any final words before we move on?
As old man that I am, I'm going to go to bed before the party starts.
Yes, Tim, you are the old man, but I am old as well, and I still have to carry on with the night. And I've got a lot of company with me. It is party cast time. Cole's here, Purnell's here, Chris is here, and Dark Mika is here as well. How is everybody doing?
We are a cluster of chuckle brokenness, and it's fantastic.
Yay.
And I'm on a submarine.
But is it a yellow submarine?
No, but it's a yeller one.
I don't know. I'm on the inside of it.
Tangerine submarine.
There's a good song.
Could be yeller on the inside.
Yeller. Oh, you're letting that slip out, aren't you?
I had a rough day. I don't feel like cutting back the redneck.
She threw that out there.
Not even trying anymore. She's like, fuck it.
Hi, I'm Cole. Welcome to the holler.
Ask me about my washing machine.
Oh, wish.
What else do you hide from us?
White truck.
Man.
Oh, car. I say far on the show. Tars. You put tars on a car.
Tars on a car.
Yeah.
How do you say, holy shit, Mr. Sinister just cheered 1,000 biddies to us? Norg, you got to give him some love.
Dropping bits! All over your fucking face.
It's a long one, sorry.
It's okay.
Wet pancakes!
It was the wet pancakes one, so it all works out. Mr. Sinister, thank you so much. That's a shitload of biddies and a shitload of subs tonight. Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it. I thank you very much. A good bean indeed.
Coffee bean.
Yeah, when know how I say all that stuff you just said? What he said. There you go.
Give me
it nice and easy.
Yeah, how do you hickify that?
Hickify what? What am I hickifying?
That was the whole thing that just happened. I don't think she can keep all of that.
Say it again. Augie keeps talking. I can't understand anybody else.
You're welcome.
You know what? We have games to talk about. This has been a long show already. We should get into the games. Are you guys ready to jump into these?
No.
I guess if we have to.
Yes and no.
Well, Chris, you get a break at the beginning.
Hey!
Oh, lucky bitch. This is unacceptable.
Unacceptable.
Take away his submarine.
Unacceptable.
Oh, God.
Only if it's yellow. If it's yellow, I'll take it away.
That's a Yorn submarine. Yeah, you don't want that.
Paint that motherfucker red. Christ.
No, I want a yellow submarine. Because we all need to live in a yellow submarine.
In a Yorn submarine.
Take out the old.
A YOLO submarine? What?
YOLO submarine.
YOLO!
Is that a thing yet? Can we make that a thing?
I think it's just became
officially a thing.
That's the episode name as of now. YOLO submarine.
YOLO submarine.
Break
my soul.
That one broke me. YOLO submarine.
We all live in you.
Oh my god. So first game to talk about tonight is called Darksiders Genesis, developed by Airship Syndicate, published by THQ Nordic, released February 14th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $39.99. Darksiders Genesis is an action adventure that tears its way through hordes of demons, angels, and everything in between on its way to hell and back with guns blazing and swords swinging. Genesis gives players their first look at the world of Darksiders before the events of the original game, as well as introduces the Horseman Strife. Everyone covered this except Chris.
Yeah,
who, Who wants to start?
Well, I say throw it to Mika.
All right. Oh, okay. Aki, start us off. Tell us about Darksiders Genesis.
Well, as you stated, you play as Strife. This is his very first one that you've only seen him, and I think, in the very end of Darksiders 3, I think was the first time you actually saw him in the game, other than like at the opening where it's like, here's the four horsemen. I think that was the only time you ever saw him, and now you finally get to play as him. He dual wields guns, which is really cool, and he's not alone in this one. He also goes along with his brother War, which is the guy from the first one, the big hulking jackass with the giant fuck off sword.
Jackass.
Fuck off.
Why is he a jackass?
He's really mean and he's rude and he has a stick up his ass so far I'm pretty sure it towers out of his mouth.
But that's kind of what makes him a great pair to be in that game though, because their chemistry is hysterical.
Mm-hmm. It is.
I have to agree with that, but I still don't like War. I think he's a jackass.
I like War.
He's just too uptight. He's too uptight. I can't.
Your face
it.
Is uptight.
Like, why would I let him knock? I just tear down the door.
I just went.
Yeah, the knock knock joke sequence was the best thing in the game.
I just knocked down the door. Why would I let him know I was there?
I was genuinely surprised by how much humor was in the writing. I've played Darksiders 3, but I hadn't played the other ones. I have them. They're in the backlog somewhere. I don't know. I'll get to them one of these years, maybe. So this was my second run-in with a Darksiders game. But Darksiders 3 didn't have quite the humor that Darksiders Genesis had at all. I thought Fury was a badass character.
Mm-hmm.
But
she's fantastic.
She wasn't funny. But the way that War and Strife.
I'm still holding on for that Switch release, guys. Come on.
The way that War and Strife, just their dialogue back and forth with each other. Normally, in a game like Genesis, I would just skip most of the cutscenes or find something to entertain myself until I was back hacking and slashing at shit again. But as we were playing, I was genuinely interested in the dialogue because it was funny and I looked forward to it. I didn't feel like it was like breaking me from the game.
You're here to that.
You know, the only reason I even played this was because it was a Darksiders game. I don't particularly like this kind of game generally, but I was like, it's Darksiders. I want to try it.
Would you say that due to it being this game and the take that you had on it, do you feel as though you had a fun time with it despite it not being your style of gameplay?
Oh yeah, I really liked it. I ended up actually got into the game.
That's one thing
that's
important.
I still don't think this genre is my type, but
one thing that's important to mention about Darksiders Genesis is for anybody that hasn't paid any attention to the marketing for it or anything, hasn't seen screenshots, it is not third person like Darksiders 3 was. It is a top-down isometric dungeon crawler type of game.
Yes.
So it's a pretty big switch up for the series to go to this type of camera and gameplay.
And there's a lot of stack customizations too.
Yeah, there was, once we got into it, there was full-fledged RPG shit going on, and I was just, like, completely overwhelmed. In fact, I was telling Joe that I think one of the things that me and Purnell played it co-op, and one of the hardest things was just, like, there was shit for explanation, and when you did get explanation, it didn't specify which character it was for.
Oh, yeah, you got items in the chest.
Yeah.
Crazy.
So one of the things was when you're playing cooperatively, one person plays as War, one person plays as Strife. Whoever starts the game is the host gets Strife, and then the second person gets War. But you can dynamically switch while you're playing, but both of you have to agree to change characters. But if you would open up a chest, and you would get something for War and you were playing a Strife, it wouldn't tell you. And then you'd be like looking through your shit like, okay, but where do I activate that?
Yeah.
And then you'd have to figure out the hard way when the other person goes, I think I have it.
Yeah, me and Joe ran into that. I was playing as Strife and he got the fucking throwing star thing.
Uh-huh. The Vorpal boomerang Blade
wars, and I kept looking at for it. I looked for it for like three or 4 minutes.
Listen, you have to hold the button down. It's press up on the D-pad. I'm telling you, it's press up. It's on my screen. Press up on the D-pad. There's nothing to press. It's not fucking there.
Yeah, I was getting kind of pissy.
And it doesn't tell you, you know, this goes to this character or this goes to that character.
What's weird is it does if you're playing it solo.
Yeah, and if you're playing solo, you can switch between the characters at will, dynamically, when you choose to, without anybody else's input. So it makes a little more sense that you can just flip through and figure it out. But when you only have one half of the team, and it doesn't break it down to, hey, your ass has this, your ass has that. They left the same kind of scenes as if you were playing alone, without giving you that kind of input. And it made for some more confusion than it should have. When it did explain things, like, it would just be screens and screens of text. And you're like, I'm so fucking tired of reading instructions. But only to realize that you read all this shit for a character that you don't even have. It was a waste of time. You can't do that shit, no way.
I will say, honestly, that once I just said screw it and just like started dabbling in the menus outside of the tutorial, though, I was able to make heads and tails of a number of things there. And it was actually kind of nice. Like, so there's a stat upgrade system in this game. And at first we were like, how do you upgrade? So do you buy armor or whatever? But the way you do it is through using these monster coins that you acquire by killing dudes or buying them at one of the two shops.
Yeah, creature cores.
And it's really cool because, like, I like the idea that you have to slot them in the proper slots to get some, like, more specific bonus stats. But otherwise, they'll just get a generic increase based on the type of core you got. And they incentivize you to replay levels, because you can keep fighting monsters to get repeat coins. And when you get a certain amount of those repeat coins, the core will level up and impart either greater stats, or it'll impart a better skill bonus to go along with it, or both, depending.
They all do both. They all do both.
Oh, sweet. And it's like,
but the thing is, if you have them slotted, not only, like, there's three different types of cores. There's wraith cores, health cores, and attack cores. The thing is, inside the actual grid itself where you're planting them all, they tell you, oh, this one will only give you the first level. So if you put a level 3 core in there, you're only getting the benefits from the first level.
Oof.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not sure if anyone but me paid attention to that, but there are a lot of level 1 and level 2 ones. And level 3 ones are much later in the tree.
What about level 5? Because Awesome Prime just dropped 5 biddies.
Drop it!
I never unlocked that, actually. So I don't know how you get level 5. Is it specifically biddy related?
He was
related?
Making a joke.
I know, I was following up with it.
Yeah.
I'm a weird man.
Don't be into Joe's bad jokes.
Level 5 biddies.
I'm an asshole. I know.
Get them Tiggo biddies.
So, Darksiders.
Yeah, fantastic game.
I do have one gripe with it. I love the level design, but it bugs me in games where you can't get everything the first time through. Like in a Metroidvania, that's one thing because it's an open area that's meant to be explored. When it's level based, let me be able to get everything. Don't make it like the Lego games where you have to complete the game and then do another run through with all your powers. Just let me do it the first time through. Design your shit so that I don't need to be forced into playing everything a second time to feel like I got my money's worth.
That is padded stat time is what that is. And it's very unfortunate because I'm like you. I'm one of those people who, when I've done it, I've done it. I want to know that I've seen it all and just move the fuck on. I'm on limited time here, folks.
I don't remember anything that requires you to return the stages aside from messing with the difficulties.
There were some things that you couldn't collect. Remember there were a couple coins where we were like, oh, we can't get that boat coin. And we would try and try and try. And that was where
Come back later with some different ability to collect that boat coin. It's just on a collectible front. That's... It's just as a completionist in games like this, you know, let me do it the first time through.
Right.
Yeah.
Remember how, like, on one level we finished and we thought we had done really well, and then we saw we were like 16 out of 19 because we couldn't get a couple of things. They were up too high or too far out.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. Well, so that was the downfall there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a couple other small issues with the game. For me, later on, all the conversations, they're kind of done like visual novels. You get a picture of the character down the bottom when they talk, and then it flips to the other character when they talk. And it's all voice acted as well. But later in the game, the voices didn't match. They'd start speaking like a couple seconds after the conversation thing came up, so you were already reading it before they start talking, and the gap just kept getting wider and wider for me as the game went on. At the beginning, they were synced perfectly, but by like level 11 or 12 or something like that, they were noticeably off, and that just kept getting worse.
That's weird.
I don't know if I'm the only one who had that problem, or if that's just it just desyncs because it takes a while to load in later levels, or what, or maybe it's because, you know, I sat there and played it for 10, 12 hours straight. Yeah, I never really know.
That might be part of it.
Might be a very small memory leak where after so long things start to desync. You should reboot the game after a reset of the console and see if it's still doing that.
This was Joe's Xbox Corner.
And another issue is, again, this is for collectibles, and for an achievement, you have to get at least one of every one of the monster cores, and one set of them is the Leviathan cores. You can only get those through an incredibly stupid, asinine piece of shit platforming section that is made to put you through hell.
Yeah.
And that's the only place where you can get that coin. You can't get it anywhere else in the entire game. And in order to collect one of every coin, you got me saying coin now, core. Fucker. One of every core, you have to do it. And it is so fun. I've spent over 7 hours on that platforming section. I still haven't beaten the last part of it.
Yeah, that is a sadistic bit of platforming. You showed me the video of someone actually completing it, and it is...
In like 4 minutes.
Oh, my God. It blew my mind how intense some of that platforming is.
Yeah, and the bad thing is about those platforms, not like you have to be damn near perfect with every single jump, or otherwise it treats you kind of like... Crash Bandicoot, where you fucking slip off the goddamn stuff, which is one of the shittiest ways of making a fucking game, because that's not difficulty related, that's being a cheap bitch, that's all that is, and I hate it. But not only is that happening, but they're in the last section, there's fucking areas that just fall, and if you fall, you instantly die, and you have to restart that entire section. There's 3 sections. Until you beat a section, you're fucked. And you have to keep restarting at the beginning of it. And I have spent so many fucking hours on the third part of that. Fuck that. Just that entire maze, fuck it. It pisses me off.
Well, get good, scrub.
Hey, that's some shit. Man. I thought we were reviewing Darksiders, not Dark Souls.
Yeah. The great thing is I'm on the very last part of the very last section, so I just have to fucking manage to do it right, and then I can finally be done with the fucking thing, and I'll be, you know, I won't want to put my fist through a fucking wall. So
tell us how you really feel about that section of the game.
Ooh, I do not have the word. I can feel the anger rising in me about it.
I feel like I didn't just learn more about the game. I also learned a bit about myself by the time I was done.
Oh, no. I know how angry I get. I have a punching bag specifically because I get angry at video games and I'm tired of fixing doors.
Well, you want to know what I want to learn about this game? I want to learn some verdicts for $40. Cole, let's start with you. What do you think?
I I'm inclined to give it a buy it. I know that it can get a little bullshit. It's got some pretty steep learning curves going on. Excuse me. But I think the humor and the writing in it, the fact that it's fully voice acted, I like that it's a change of pace for the series. Overall, I had a really good time with it. I like that it's got co-op. That's new for Darksiders.
Online co-op?
Yeah, online co-op, and I fully support that shit. So, I think I'm pretty comfortable giving it a buy it.
Pernell, what do you think?
Honestly, I feel like it's a buy it if you're down with two-player co-op and if you're already fond of the Darksiders franchise, because it's more of the lore and the character interactions that you like, and the gameplay itself is decent, too. I feel as though Strife brings a much-needed sense of humor to this franchise, so it'd be a buy it in that regard. But in the off chance that you're not exactly itching at the play, like, you know, a Darksiders game, or you're playing it by yourself, I would almost say it's more of a try, because it doesn't really do anything particularly new. It just does what it does well, which is great, but I feel like there's other options out there for this style of gameplay if you're just searching for that. But buy it if you're into Darksiders, because it's a good product.
Aki, what about you?
I say go for it. I think it's a good game, especially if you like Darksiders.
Oh, Darksiders. My God.
New franchise. Darksiders.
Hey, I'm all for it. Just need some cute girls in there. I'm cool. If you like Darksiders, it's fantastic. Though that being said, if you have a choice between Steam or a console version and you don't really care which you get, the Steam version is $10 cheaper.
Really?
Yep.
Hate when they do that.
Kind of a bitch.
It's the only place where it's $10 cheaper as well.
None of
like
a bitch.
All of the other PC place, which I believe is only Stadia, which is fucking garbage. It's not cheaper there. It's only Steam where it's $10 cheaper, and I don't know why that is, because it's not on sale or anything. It's just $10 cheaper.
Who knows?
So if your PC is good enough to handle it, and you don't care if it's on PC or console, get it there. It's cheaper.
Well, I need my Xbox achievements, so that's why I bought it.
Oh, you and Cole, my God. You should have seen her last. Oh, my God.
Took us forever to get an achievement to pop.
Achievements. Like, they're dead.
What the hell did we got to do?
Dead.
The achievements are dead. Joe's bad at that?
Who do I got to blow to get an achievement at that?
I was laughing my ass. I'm like, they're all dead, Cole. Every achievement died. You just gotta play the game now.
Somebody, I don't know. It's like I was literally like, "Who do I have to blow to get an achievement in this?"
Game? It was hysterical.
Well, in that game, like, I would have to say it's probably your co-op partner. So
look, I listen. No, I did eventually pop achievements as a co-op partner, but the thing that kills me is that I spend a lot of time playing a lot of games that can be completed in 15 minutes. And so when I gotta wait 2 hours for one fucking achievement to pop, I'm like, man, I could have had 4,000 by now. But
it's kind of weird that you think that way, considering you put thousands of hours into video games where you obviously aren't getting any more achievements in them.
I know, like Rocket League so and damn Division. Long.
She probably has like an emergency achievement ding on a playback recorder for those scenarios. It's like ding, 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 ding.
I wouldn't be shocked if that was on her phone.
No, you want to know what my phone ringtone is? It's Isaac from The Division.
Oh yeah, I think he literally does
it does the little like crackle noise, and it says incoming message from The Division, and yeah. Yeah.
On that note, we have some non-achievement games to talk about. So, Aki, we're going to let you get going. You have yourself a wonderful night, and thank you for joining us.
Yeah, get out of here. I'll talk to all of
you. Get the fuck out of here.
It was a jam, and not of the root beer variety, though that is also a jam.
But now it is the Chris Taylor Show, because we have two Sega Ages games to talk about. The first one being Sonic the Hedgehog 2, developed by M2, published by Sega, released February 20th on the Switch for $7.99. Hailed as one of the most successful games for the Genesis, Mega Drive. Sonic the Hedgehog 2 garnered critical acclaim swiftly after its 1992 release. Follow Sonic and Tails in his series debut as they team up against the nefarious Dr. Eggman, no, Dr. Robotnik, in order to save the Chaos Emeralds from the clutches of evil. Chris, tell us about Sega Ages Sonic the Hedgehog 2.
Yeah. Well, it's Robotnik, but he's called Eggman because he has drones that look like eggs. That's movie lore.
See? His name's Robotnik.
In the movie they start calling him Eggman too?
Yeah, I mean, you know, spoilers, I guess.
Yeah.
It's not a spoiler. I'm okay. I'm still going to see it eventually. I'm not worried about that. I'm just surprised they call him in the movie.
He calls him Eggman, and there's an in-movie explanation for it.
Yeah.
and the movie's really good, by the way. Go see it everybody. It's freaking good.
So, yeah, what do you think of the movie?
Dude, I love the movie. Let's talk about the movie.
This will just be movie discussion again.
Yeah, this is Sonic 2 on the Switch. What more do you want?
Cole, did you see it yet?
No, I did not.
You had the weekend. You said you were going to do it over the weekend.
I meant this coming weekend. We didn't get paid till Monday.
Because that means I'm the only one that can't get spoiled by it then, because I haven't seen it either. I just suck at going to the movies in general, but I also like the fact that there's been multiple conversations where I've been where people were seriously claiming that they didn't have to fix Sonic to make the movie something you'd want to go see. It's like, well, kiss my ass, because yes, I would not have wanted to see it with that trash variant of Sonic. I don't care. Nobody says.
So they absolutely fix Sonic, and he looks great, really great in the film. Actually, my favorite thing, though, is Robotnik's vehicles and robots. Those are really, really good looking. But I mean, yeah, I would actually say that, like, it's solid enough that if I watched the movie and it was trash Sonic, I would just be like, dang, that was a good movie, but shame about that trash Sonic. That's about all I would have said about it, you know, but it is very nice that they fixed him, and yeah, and then got summarily fired. But anyways,
from what I'm hearing about the money it's making, it's likely going to get a sequel.
Yeah, but I hope it gets a sequel, because I can't say any more without spoilers, so I'm just going to say I really hope there's a sequel. I will definitely go watch it. Okay, so, and then I had one more tangent before I actually started this review. I bought a 6-button Genesis controller from Retrobit, the official one, and I did it mostly for my Genesis Mini, because it has Street Fighter 2 on it, and I can't play it with a 3-button controller, because it sucks. Not only for the fact that you only have the 3 buttons, but also that D-pad just, like, wrecks my thumb. So I bought this thing, and it's printed on the box that it works for Switch. I plugged it in. It doesn't work for Switch. Not natively, no. Doesn't even register as a USB thing or anything.
The hell?
It does nothing. And it's got instructions in it on how to get it to work on Switch, and it just doesn't read. So I think that what Retrobit did is because people got it to work with a dongle, they just decided to print it on the box and not follow up with it at all. I think I need a dongle, like, that makes it compatible.
Maybe.
Because, yeah, if I plug it into the Switch, it does not work. And it works perfectly on everything else, including on the computer. So I now have a controller for my retro, like, emulation and stuff.
And what brand is this?
Retrobit. It's actually Sega branded, because it's, you know, Sega decided to give it their official seal of whatever, and it's like the one that's it's the 8-button arcade whatever, because it's got an R and an L button for whatever reason. It's the one that's like on Amazon for like $14.99 or $19.99. I'm still gonna buy like a second one, because it's so good. It's like a perfect recreation, and I can say that because I currently use a CDX with a 6-button controller, and the two are identical. So it's a great controller. Just don't buy it expecting it to work on your Switch. So try it in the inside USB port. I did try that, trust me. I tried it on in every way that I could possibly.
Sorry, Chris, I don't know if I can trust you, man. It's just I've been hurt before.
Do you know your video games, Chris? I don't know.
Do I even know? Well, okay, so M2 has once again graced us with these great ports of some Genesis games, and arcade games, of course. And this one, the Sonic 2, I was really excited about because I actually bought the one for the 3DS way back in the day. So I already knew that they have a few extra modes that are on it that kind of give it quality of life. For instance, Ringkeeper mode, which and I'm doing this review assuming everybody has played Sonic 2. I'm not going to describe Sonic 2. If you haven't
you're
played Sonic,
fast rodent.
Yeah, you are a fast rodent again. No, we're just going to talk about like the M2 treatment here. So the last time they had a mode called Ring Keep mode, which actually even has its own ranking system. So it's you can, of course, like all the M2 or the M2 Sega Ages games, you can have online ranking or just local ranking if you like. And they just keep a separate ranking type for Ring Keep and for the original mode, which is really cool. Ring Keep mode makes it where you don't lose every single ring when you get hit in the game, which, of course, has always been a thing of Sonic. It's always like gather up 50 rings to hit the checkpoint and get to the bonus level. And if you get the Chaos Emerald, then just try to keep one ring in stock. You know, every time you get hit, try to get one more, you know, a few rings just to hold on and then keep living. This one, it just like knocks out about 10 or 20 rings or something like that. It seems to vary.
So a lot more forgiving.
Yes, a lot more forgiving, which is very nice. You know, and considering that the emulation is pretty much perfect, you know, that's means you're going to get hit a lot. So the most noteworthy addition of this collection, and this is the first time I've ever seen this in a port of Sonic 2, it actually contains the full Sonic 2 and Knuckles from back in the day. So of course
really?
They had. Yes. So they had the Sonic and Knuckles attachment for the Genesis that, you know, would basically came with Sonic 3. And it was the way that you could play as Knuckles the Echidna in Sonic 3. But a lot of, you know, it also retroactively like put him into Sonic 2. So you could play through the entirety of Sonic 2, a game made 2 years before the inclusion of Knuckles. And it actually put him in that game, too. And I feel like a lot of people never really played Sonic 2 with Knuckles. Like, it's actually really good. It's amazing how much his wall climbing and, like, floaty ability actually sees some stuff in a game that was never designed for him. So, like, it's a really good experience. And it also, you know, again, has the Ring Keep mode and the original mode. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's basically a whole different game, you know? Then it includes the challenge mode, which is actually they included it on the first Sonic as well. And this is like actually something that they introduced way back when Sonic had, I guess, an arcade port. They would do a 100 ring challenge where you had to get 100 rings in a certain amount of time rather than like basically you're racing against the clock and you have to get 100 rings and then get to the goal. So it's basically a speed run challenge. And it's pretty cool. And of course, you can play that one as Knuckles as well. Beyond that, they actually have another inclusion that I found personally really interesting. So I don't know if anybody here has played Sonic Mania, that really, really good, like new Sonic game on the Switch and PS4 and all those. Yeah. So it has a thing in it called Drop Dash, which is where when you jump in the air and then you hold down the jump button again, when you land, you're instantly going to launch into a spin attack, which is great for, like, you know, if you don't want to just sit there and duck and, like, you know, if you're, like, defeating an enemy and you want to, like, and you're jumping into him and you want to, like, be dashing as soon as you hit the ground. It's just a really cool system. Well, they actually have it in this game. They decided to include it in... well, obviously the Sonic version of Sonic and Knuckles, because when you push the, you know, jump button with Knuckles, he does his float. But it's in there, and I think that's actually really cool that a modern Sonic utility from the newest game is, like, actually retrofitted into Sonic 2.
That's really cool.
And it is toggleable. You have to, like, reset the game to turn it on or off. You can't just toggle it anytime.
No.
But... you know, it's there, and that's really cool. And, you know, beyond that, it has a stage select mode, so you can actually go in and, you know, if you want to start yourself off in the, you know, Death Egg Zone or whatever, Metropolis Zone, then you surely can. And beyond that, just the normal the normal stuff. They've got a ring chain display, which of course, you know, that's just how many rings you get consecutively, and that that you know has its own ranking in the online stuff. You could turn that on or off. And then yeah, beyond that, it is Sonic 2.
Electric Boogaloo.
Sounds like a winner to me. The other Sega Ages game is Puyo Puyo 2, developed again by M2, published by Sega. Also released February 20th on the Switch for $7.99. Stack and change your Puyo combos to negate garbage Puyo sent by your opponent. Swap between single Puyo Puyo, double Puyo Puyo, and endless Puyo Puyo game modes for more Puyo fun. How many more times can they get me to say Puyo?
Puyo? Chris,
tell us about Puyo Puyo, Puyo, Puyo 2.
Puyo 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 Puyo. we all live in a Puyo submarine.
El Puyo.
Oh my god, no.
Okay, so Puyo 2. Actually, in Japan, called Puyo Puyo 2, because 2 means extreme, and it also is the pronunciation for 2. So it's actually a pun. Yeah, so this is, of course, they released the original Puyo Puyo before, and 2, I think, is the more popular of the games, because they basically messed with the mechanics in a way that made it a lot more... Well, what the way they put it is that it makes the rounds longer, because so here's the thing about Puyo is that like in the first game, you know, as you get it's a you know swapping tiles kind of puzzle, except your tiles are little blobs. Many people have seen it. It also came out in the U.S. as Kirby's Avalanche and Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine, and it's a very popular game in terms of like competitive like esports type stuff.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. And and I really feel like this was like brought out with that in mind. But like kind of the difference between the first Puyo and the second in gameplay is that, you know, in the first game, as you racked up chains and combos and stuff like that, you know, and just dropped all these like slimes to get rid of in on your opponent's screen. There's an amount that you could hit where you could basically just instantly win the round because there's no way that they could get enough Puyos on their side, dropped in the time to like get rid of the garbage and be able to win. So, you know, it was like, you know, rounds would end very quickly as people got better at the game. So what Puyo 2 introduced is a system whereby if the person is racking up this huge chain, if you yourself could pull off a quick chain or even a really good chain before the stuff dropped, it could actually eliminate it before it even hits your screen. And if you ended up with like a surplus of you know, chains and combos and, you know, points to get, you know, garbage, you can actually end up dropping the same garbage back onto your opponent. So it then becomes like this kind of juggling match where, you know, whereby the two players just link up chains and stuff and kind of keep the garbage away from them rather than deal with it as it drops. In that sense, it's kind of the better game than Puyo. Now, the thing about this port, well, for one, the availability of Puyo Puyo 2.
Well, before you stop talking about things dropping, yeah, sure. Trivium Champ just dropped 50 biddies. So thank you, Trivium Champ.
Dropping bits!
All right, back to Puyo Puyo Tuyo.
Okay, Tuyo. That's what it should have been called, Puyo Tuyo. right?
Come on, so, Sega. Missed opportunity.
So, yeah, in this game, like I said, the availability of Puyo 2 is that actually if you have the Nintendo, the Super Nintendo online thing, like, you know, if you have Switch Online and that gives you access to the not virtual console. What do they call it now? The just Switch Online.
Switch Online, yeah. Nintendo Switch Online.
The Super Nintendo version is actually in the set of Super Nintendo games that you can play. It was one of the launches. Of course, famously untranslated. It is all in Japanese, including the menus. So very hard to like, you know, select from all the different modes unless you have a translator on you or something. So it's a game that's already available for, you know, as the console release, but this is actually the arcade release, and thus, you know, the sound's a little bit better, graphics are largely the same, but, you know, it's got all the modes that the arcade mode has, and the way they got around the very, you know, unreadable if you don't read Japanese, of course, the, like, you know, menus and stuff, is that it's actually all in the start menu. So you've got your arcade mode, which of course just takes you to a, you know, game where you basically randomly select an opponent until you get enough points to gain a level, quote unquote, and then that takes you to the next tier in this big tower, and then there's more opponents, and as you defeat them you get points, and when you get enough points you get to move on to the next level, and so on and so forth till you win the game. And then there's endurance mode, which is from the original, that you just face all the enemies, you know, in a row. Versus mode, where of course you can select your opponent, and of course there's also two player and, you know, more. And then, of course, you can play online, which is really cool. And then it has, you know, the time reverse system, which is pretty good, especially if you're learning the game, because Puyo is, it's an easy concept, but it's actually really tough to, like, get really good at it. And
oh, yeah.
But once you are pretty good at it, it gets really fun. So I do recommend people actually do that. Now, the thing about...
Flashbacks.
Yeah. Now, the thing about Puyo Tuyo, as the Sega Ages release, is that as good as they are about quality of life stuff, which I'll actually get to more options in a minute, the game is still entirely in Japanese. They didn't translate it. So... And you know, I'll get to what they did, but basically, so the storyline, which there's not really much of a storyline, is, you know, of course, in Japanese, and the character interactions, whenever you win or lose against a character before you fight them, all of that's still in Japanese. The menus are basically in English, and, like, you know, certain things are in English, but so you can play the game, but yeah, it's, you're not going to see any new translations, which, funny enough, the only translated straight up version of Puyo that came out was Puyo Pop on the Bandai Wonderswan. No, I'm sorry, the Neo Geo Pocket.
Neo Geo Pocket.
Yeah, I got that upstairs. Yeah. That's still the only English version of this game that exists. Yeah, after Puyo versus Tetris. Well, yes, but that's just Puyo. Like, there's also Puyo Championship, which is available from the eShop, which actually does incorporate Puyo 2 rules. And I have that too, and it's actually a really good game as well. And in fact, if you're looking for something, more, you know, in the competitive vein that has more options, then Puyo Puyo Champions might be your better bet.
I'm curious about that. Like, is it actually worth owning if you already have Puyo Puyo Tetris?
Yeah, because Puyo Puyo Tetris is kind of a different animal entirely. But Puyo Puyo Championships is good, except that it doesn't have a single player campaign. It's just got, like, various versions of versus modes, because it was designed with eSports in mind. Yeah, I mean, the thing about this one that I think makes it pretty cool is that, you know, just the options that you can toggle offset on and off, which is the thing I was talking about, where you know, juggle the garbage blocks to each other. They've got a thing called alt rules, which I couldn't find an explanation for. So, you can also change the actual, presentation of the Puyo blobs. You can make them look, more like, you know, more opaque, more like transparent, darker, lighter. You can also, like, customize each color to, like, make a good, you know, your perfect set, which is kind of cool.
Or turn them obviously all red and just fuck yourself over completely.
Right. Not as many options, of course, as Puyo Puyo Championships. That game, I fell asleep last night. Like, I fired it up to like play it to compare the two, and I fell asleep while trying to select a character because there was over 100 to choose from.
Jeez.
Yikes. So, and I was just looking at each one, and I was like, and I just conked out. So yeah. The main selling point of this game is the fact that it does have online match. It is an arcade port. So if you are into competitive Puyo, this is a good way to get into it. It is more accessible than the Super Nintendo port because all of the menus are included in the start menu. And it just has a couple of, like, little cool things. Like, you know, of course, a really good tutorial, for people who are new to the game. And it also has a separate section that actually gives you the list of characters, like every character in the game, and it gives you, like, actual flavor text descriptions of them. So that's actually kind of neat too.
Nice.
And of course, it has time reverse as well, which again, for people who are learning the game, is really valuable because you're going to end up messing up something. And it kind of like lets you teach yourself how to build up really good combos, which is key to winning the game.
Yeah.
So, yeah, at the $8, I would say it's a quality Sega Ages release, but without being translated, there's not a whole lot that sets it apart from all the other Puyos that are out there. It's just, it's in the stack. And if you are a fan of Puyo Puyo 2, which I am, I would recommend getting it. But otherwise, there's plenty more Puyo to have.
All right. So $8 on Sonic, $8 on Puyo. Your overall verdict on each of them, you said,
Sonic 2, absolutely. This is the most complete and options-filled version of Sonic 2 I have ever come across, and I've come across a lot of them. So this is like, as far as like, yeah, being on Switch, as long as you can find a freaking Genesis controller that actually works. Because I find it much better to play with the original controller than even the Pro controller. But yes, it's absolutely worth it. Puyo 2. A buy it if you're already a fan of Puyo and you're looking to get the next chapter, a try it any other way. The original Puyo, by the way, is in English, so you'd probably have more luck there.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Next game to talk about is called Rune Factory 4 Special, developed by Neverland, published by XSEED and Marvelous Games, released February 25th on the Switch for $39.99. Welcome to Selphia, a region ruled by the native dragon Ventuswill, and you. Start an exciting new life in the village and embark on a grand adventure. Purnell, tell us about Rune Factory 4 Special.
I gotta say that there's a lot of talk going on right now about the upcoming release of Animal Crossing New Horizons. And I think it's funny because as I've been playing this game, I started kind of feeling like I don't really care all that much about Animal Crossing anymore. Because I'm getting all the gameplay that I would generally want out of Animal Crossing, but with more gameplay and a narrative. It's Rune Factory 4 is a game that I've owned on the 3DS but never booted up, and I am genuinely regretting that right now because this game is fantastic. It is, I'll talk about the game and then you'll hear it firsthand. So, the game starts out with your main character. You choose whether you would be a boy or a girl, prince or princess, dude or dudette, landing in the center of this town by way of falling off of an airship, and you are thrust through ridiculous means into a role of a prince or princess to help this country get on its feet. And this is done by, oddly enough, farming. You start farming in the castle courtyard. In addition to farming, though, there are a ton of other activities you can engage in this game that they kind of walk you through a series of like tutorials that take place over various entry days of the game until eventually the game just kind of opens full tilt and you just get to do whatever. But the way I'll just walk through certain elements of it to make more sense of it. So one of the things you can do in this game throughout the course of the days, like I earlier mentioned, is farming. You get various farm tools, scythes, which can be used to chill them, to cut weeds, hose, which can be used to, you know, hose, till the fields, and you know, the first one you get is a cheap hoe. You get a cheap hoe.
Just the way you said it, you're like, hose.
You get hose, yeah. But you get a hoe to till the fields. Yeah, we
work, bitch, work.
We're plowing with the hoe, so okay.
I laughed at it hardcore, too. I'm not going to lie.
I'm paying like, you to till my fields.
But you get the cheap hoe, then you get you also get like hammers, which you can use to like crush rocks, axes to chop wooden stumps, and various other tools with the intent being to clear the field, harvest products from various things like wood and mineral and rock, plant items, and then water them until they grow, and then harvest them and sell them for money. That is one of the main ways to make money in the game, which will be used for a ridiculous number of things throughout the play. Another thing you can do is pretty much a number of crafting options that you can unlock as you play through the game, such as cooking, crafting, chemistry, and smithing. all of these things being products that are done by acquiring elements, whether from the, like the earlier mentioned, like harvesting of goods, growing of goods, or exploration, which I'll get to in a bit. And then you can take those items and then craft them using recipes or blind diving, if you wanted to take that route, into new cool items and products, which will be used throughout the game too. You can go on adventures, different levels. There's different areas around a world map outside the town where you can go with weaponry, which you can acquire through smithing or purchasing. And you'll be pretty much exploring the world, fighting enemies. And every once in a while, you'll get like a story element that will require, it'll say like a dungeon or something, where you'll fight through the dungeon, kill monsters, and get goods, eventually beating a boss and unlocking more story material. And then, of course, to go along with the farming element there and being like a typical Harvest Moon spinoff game, you can also befriend a ridiculous number of townspeople in this game, which will ultimately unlock things like events. You can eventually also marry a spouse if you can manage to woo the right guy or girl into your quarters. Put that cheap hoe away and get yourself a nice bride. Let me stop it. but you can basically, like, you know, find yourself like a love interest in the game. And it's just the game. This game is just wonderful to me. Every aspect of it works with other aspects of it seamlessly in a way that creates a nice homogeneous product. When you take requests from the request box, being things that the townsfolk want you to do for them, whether it be to provide them with goods and services, or just hang out with them, or any number of different things. When you fulfill those requests, you will get what are known as prince points. Prince points are what you use in the castle to fulfill various quote-unquote orders to either enhance and upgrade your farming setup, like to get new, you know, expanded farm, new gear. You can use it to get licenses to do the different crafting things. You can also host festivals or set up festivals, which are contests you can enter in hopes of winning or losing, but whichever you do, with a side product being that you increase tourism to the town, which generates more requests, more everything, to the point where it's also kind of like one of the main plot points of the game is getting the tourism up. So you'll be doing that as like the main story progressor through the game, is fulfilling all the requests to get the press points up, to get the, basically just to hopefully figure out the secret behind what the heck is up with your memory, how to save the town, how to save, well, everything. But and though it sounds like it's a little bit high stakey because there's the word save involved, it really isn't very high stakes. So it's a very relaxing game. I genuinely found myself sinking stupid amounts of time into it by its virtue of the fact that it hits you with that one more day scenario. Because the other thing I forgot to mention that would appeal to people who are, you know, achievement chasers like you guys, is that even though this game doesn't have achievements in it, it does have a lot of stats. Stats for everything. There's a walking stat, a running stat, a bathing stat, a hammering stat. I could just name a ton of crap. And as you
a host stat?
Oh, they're the host. A host stat? Ho-in. And as you do any of these functions in the game, you'll get experience towards them, and eventually you'll get a skill up. And when the skill up happens, you'll get a big, like, skill up text across the screen, and you'll know you leveled up. Have something, you know what the heck it's going to do for you until you go into the menu and see outright scroll and see what the stat does when you boost. Like, it usually gives you more hit points and more rune points, which is like your stamina gauge in the game. But you'll be seeing that a lot. It's almost like a nice dopamine hit whenever it pops up, to the point where when you eventually start getting your stats high enough that you don't get them too frequently anymore, you start to feel like you miss it. You miss the brr, 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 brr. It goes from being excessive to something that you long for. It's crazy.
So it pops up, but, and you're like, pimping, level 7, yeah, ho.
That's right. Now I can till 4x4 whole fields. But it's this game. I digress, though. This game is on point. Like, it amazes me that this game is coming out. Like, if you like Animal Crossing and you're waiting a whole month for that game right now, and you haven't played Rune Factory 4 on the 3DS, you genuinely owe it to yourself to buy this game. And even if you, well, I want to say even if you didn't, if you did play on 3DS, they have this like newlywed mode that they added. But I mean, I feel like that's not a huge draw unless you really love Rune Factory, because that's basically like some extra like story elements that they add for each of the different couplings you can get in the game, but you can only unlock them once you get those couplings in the game. So you'll basically have to buy the game, play through the game again to get the coupling, and then unlock it in newlywed mode to see what that vignette extra story sequence is. So it adds a lot of time to see these little extra bits. So if you're a big fan of Rune Factory and you're like, one more go, well then yeah, definitely grab it for this, because you'll want to see the extra tidbits when you finish your run-throughs, whereas on the 3DS you won't have access to that when you beat the game with a character companionship. But oh my god, this game is so good. Like I might get, if I get Animal Crossing now, it'll probably be more so because my friends are playing it and I just want to interact with them. But I feel like,
I was gonna say, one more thing this has over Animal Crossing: price point.
That's right, it's cheaper than Animal Crossing.
Yeah,
it's $40 for a whopping load of content. And again, though it was originally released on the 3DS, on this one you get it looks nicer on the Switch. Unfortunately, you lose the dual screen access that you had on there. But I honestly did not miss it. The only thing that was kind of lame, there was one point where a character says, "Hey, you can buy stuff from me. Just look at the flower icon on the lower screen." And I'm like, where is that screen? Please show me. But for the most part, I didn't miss it at all. I mean, a lot of games like that on the 3DS anyway, it was like a nice added aspect of like more screen real estate, but really it was just screen real estate. They didn't use it for gameplay aspects. So I didn't really feel like I missed it on this either. You're getting a much nicer game. It holds up. It looks very nice. And I don't feel as though this is a port at all. It looks beautiful. I am fine with it. It is worth my time. Was worth my time. Still worth my time. There's a lot more to freaking doing it. And it will be worth your time, too.
So $40, your official verdict.
Oh, God. Buy this game, man. It's just do it. I thought I was done with farming games. I was full of shit.
Oh, they're going to pull me back in, aren't they?
They should. It's worth it. Get out there and trim, till the fields with your hose.
Come on, bitches.
We got
work to do.
That's right. Kill them, please. I didn't even mention
you. Get the beans, woman. Get the beans.
Get the beans. Pimp name slip back.
All right. Anyway, next game to talk about is called Bucket Knight, developed by Pigeon Dev, published by Sometimes You, releasing February 28th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $4.99. Even knights still have to pay taxes, loans, and alimony. Help unarmed but brave knight in his sacred mission to find the Holy Grail and make some money. Explore dungeons, slay enemies, avoid traps, stay alive, and get rich. Chris, tell us about this first game from Sometimes You.
Yeah. Okay, so Bucket Knight. I was thinking that it was going to be a knight with a bucket on his head, and because that's what the picture was. It's actually like a gunman with what looks like a barrel on his head. So already
close enough.
Point of close enough. By the way, it took me over an hour, like probably the third time that I played, that I started it up to play it, to realize that if you push on the title screen, if you push left and then the A button or whatever, it will toggle the retro mode TV, fake TV screen on and off. Mm-hmm. I thought that the game was permanently stuck in retro mode. But that's the thing, is that, and they advertise this themselves, is that the game contains no text. So therefore, everything down to like options and stuff is done in pictures.
Yeah,
but then there are numbers, of course. So yeah, this is a stage-based challenge platformer with shooting elements. Like I said, you are a guy. I guess he is a bucket knight, and it's 8-bit style, sort of. It's hard to tell what this really looks like besides, you know, just a retro styled video game.
It has a nice retro aesthetic. This is as straightforward a game as you can get, and I love that about it.
Yeah, it's really cool. So basically, you go through these stages, and there's enemies of different ilks. Like, some of them also have guns. Some of them run at you with dynamite, and then, you know, they die if they hit a wall. Some of them are just crates and barrels. And either way, you are to shoot all of them. And then reach, basically, usually you have to reach a key and then the end of the stage. The key usually opens up a door on the other side of the stage where you can get through and then, you know, hit up the portal. The portal, of course, takes you to the next stage, and they just, you know, show up in a sequence. there, now, the thing about it is that that's the one goal. That's the main goal, of course, is to get through all the stages. But peppered throughout the stages, of course, are money in the form of floating coins and things like that, etc. You are not required to get these coins if you don't want to, but they will be your only way to purchase new guns, which you're going to want because, of course, you start with the pea shooter, and then you can get like a little, I guess, a semi-automatic gun that shoots like three bullets at once, and then you get a shotgun, and then you get the other gun that I haven't gotten yet.
Chain gun, a mini gun.
Chain gun, gotcha. And they
yeah, it's all about the shotgun. Once you get the shotgun, it's OP.
Yeah, shotgun is great. And like the cool thing about it is that the way it's balanced is that, you know, you have a certain amount of like hearts, which even though the damage is still represented in numbers, which is actually kind of handy. You know, you basically have a certain amount of hearts, and if you lose them all for any reason, you have to start the entire stage over again. There's no checkpoints in these stages. So it becomes actually kind of a cool, like, you know, kind of developing a strategy for each part of the level as you go through, because, like, nothing in this game is insurmountable. You can just fly through, like, certain stages, and then some may take you a few times, but nothing felt like it was not fun levels of difficulty. So I like that about it. Yeah. And again, once you have the shotgun, which shoots, you know, at a upwards and lower diagonal trajectory, as well as straightforward, and does, you know, about as much damage as the pea shooter, then, yeah. And you can also triple that up if you can hit all the enemy with all three of those at a close range. Yeah, that's a really good way to go. The action is nice and smooth, which I really always, you know, enjoy about these, even though it's not strictly retro, because, you know, retro games are a lot jankier. But, you also, of course, get the double jump and things like that. The other thing that, the other thing that is that some of the stages are kind of an auto scroller in that you have to be able to get through them because there's a buzzsaw coming after you.
Oh yeah, the escape stages.
I
actually had an issue in one or two of them, and then again in another stage I found it's probably only a handful of times through the whole game. There were some jumps that were like pixel perfect jumps where you had to like jump at precisely the very top of your jump to have enough height to reach a platform.
Yeah.
And it made it annoying because one or two of those were in auto scrolling levels, and I died so many times despite jumping at the top of my jump, but just not making that.
Just not connecting. Yeah.
Yeah. It was irritating, but not enough to make me not like the game.
Yeah. You played through like all of it pretty much. Yeah. Right?
I completed the game. This is a fairly easy 1,000 gamer score on Xbox. It's basically, you get an achievement per stage, plus you get achievements for buying each of the weapons, and there you go.
Yeah,
you gotta be really interested in this game, because the way you describe it, it reminds me of Kid Chameleon from back in the day, with the chainsaw, with the buzzsaw wall chasing after you.
I never got to play that one, actually, so. Yeah, I was going to say, like, about the gun shooty, like, mechanic thing. That's kind of what I dig about this game, is that, you know, the guns are very expensive to obtain, right? Like, they cost, like, thousands, while you're getting, like, 5, 10, and I think 20 increments of money. So it actually does behoove you to get as much money as possible in each of the stages, because you cannot revisit stages, so you can't just grind up money. So, like, if you go too long without... You can?
Yeah.
How do you do it?
Just go back.
Oh, okay. Let me see.
He was in gotta-go-fast mode. It didn't occur to him.
I retract my my praise, then, for that. Oh, yeah, this, and then you can do the... You could do the intro again, which is funny.
Yeah, because I went back to a couple of them because I didn't kill all the enemies. And then after a while, I realized there's no reason to kill all the enemies and collect all the coins in every level. Just fucking get through it.
Right.
And that's basically, yeah, it was a quick and easy thousand. And for $5, I gotta say, I think it's an easy buy it. Chris, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's actually a really solid little game, and it is that it's definitely, it's the, I think best you can do for $5. Like, I, you know, would question it if it was any more, but, and would laugh if it was any less, because I'd say they need to charge more. So I think it's actually at the perfect price, and it is quality. If you're selective about your cheaper games, and, you know, if you have a Switch, you have every reason to be. This is one you can buy with confidence, I think, because it's quite solid.
Great game, cheap, easy thousand, easy platinum. Sounds like a winner.
No platinums on Switch, but yes.
Yeah. What are you gonna do?
That, you're right. Yeah. Just get a whiteboard and write it myself.
Yeah, just like mark it down and keep tabs of it. You know what to do.
Show it to my friends. Be like, look what I did.
Whatever, Chris. Whatever. Anyway, next game is Vasilis, developed by Marginal Act, published by Sometimes You, released February 26th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and Vita for $4.99. Vasilis is a hand-drawn adventure game. Vasilis, the main character, has lost her husband Peter in the rebellious city center. The city is plunged into chaos by constant riots, and almost every day something is burned or someone is killed. Chris, tell us about the world of Vasilis.
Well, okay, so Vasilis. This one I knew was either going to be like some brilliant work of art or just like a depressing slog through like nothing. Turns out it's kind of between the two. So, yeah, this is purely a walking about, point and click kind of game. But instead of, pointing and clicking, you're just walking over something and picking it up or talking to someone. That's all there is to the game. You just gather items and use them where you need to. And go from place to place.
Very straightforward, just like Bucket Knight.
It's very straightforward. Yeah. None of the puzzles I saw like were in any way like confusing. It would just be like a matter of, oh crap, where did I see that thing before? Or, oh, here's a thing, I need to pick it up. Because you have an inventory, and so you never end up losing you never end up like with too many items. You can just pick up anything that you can, and it's eventually going to come in handy. So, you know, there's nothing. Your character moves slow because she is an old lady. And, you know, like, it's basically walking around, picking up items, using them where possible, and looking at things. That's all it is. So the only real things to talk about are the aesthetics and the writing. So the storyline, it starts off where it's kind of like, oh, it's a lady, she's looking for her husband, and people keep saying, oh, I just saw him, he was over here, and so you go over there, and something else happens, and they're like, oh, well, he was actually over here, and all this other stuff. And eventually, you know, you just kind of, I guess after a while, go to bed, and then start the next chapter, which each day is a chapter, for a total of, I want to say it was 5 or 6, and every time you wake back up, the city has changed a lot. And like, there's new characters in different places. Places that you went before are now blocked off by something. And there's new places you can go to. So you end up like exploring the same place, but it just gets more and more fucked up. Like every time you wake back up and go through it. And they really like, I don't know how much of the story to like reveal to show how weird it is. But yeah, it's like they say it's based on these Ukraine riots that took place in 2014, which I didn't bother to look up. Cause it absolutely isn't. There's nothing in reality that works like this game. There's like these giant, like 10-foot tall people that like walk around in Speedos and make this weird undulating noise. And then sometimes turn themselves completely like, you know, they just bend their back over backwards while still walking and just go.
Yeah, I did that last weekend.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, fun. It's just like regular things. the whole thing is hand drawn, quote unquote. It all looks like something that somebody scribbled in a notebook, basically. Everything has like very few frames of animation and are usually wildly, wildly jittering. Like,
remember Squiggle Vision?
It's like a, this is like like Parkinson's vision, though. Like, it's not just squiggling. Like, things are just, there's one character.
I'm just saying what to compare it to.
Yeah. No, it does kind of have that look, but like, there's one character whose face just like doubles in size every other frame. And like, and it just like ends up in like different places on the screen. There's actually some cool like moments, I think. Like, there's a one character, because he's a shady type, his face is completely scratched out, like with a pencil, like bearing down. So that's just what his face looks like. And there's another scene where the old lady gets caught by the cops and is interrogated, and as the interrogation intensifies, the room, the like screen just gets covered in dialogue boxes all saying the same thing. So it like gives you a nice little sense of panic. And, you know, there's things like that. And then, like I said, there's the weird stuff. So, like, you kind of find out that for some reason in this town, people who were dead are coming back to life because they're growing towers in different parts of the town. I'm not sure exactly what they mean by all that. A lot of the dialogue is very unapproachable because it's not only written like weirdly, like awkwardly, seemingly bad translation, but I don't know. It could be intentional. But the other thing is that, you know, there's lots of spelling and grammar errors, and a lot of sentences are just, they just don't go anywhere. So you kind of don't really get a good sense of what's going on. You know, and the only way that you can really tell what you're, where you're able to go in this game is because there'll just literally be like scribbles. Like, an open door is basically a door with a whole bunch of animated scribbles inside of it.
Yeah.
And like, to walk to the next street, like the street will have scribbles on it and things like that. So it's like, it's a style that I think is intending for people to be uncomfortable. The whole game just has this kind of like uncomfortableness to it. I think what it really has going for it is the fact that it is just utterly weird. And if you're the kind who likes that, but I didn't find it weird fun like I found Baobab's Mausoleum, which, by the way, I'm in the process of replaying now. But, you know, it's just one of those things where it's just like kind of a nonsensical like fever dream. Like, it kind of reminds me of those like really bad old Russian animations that you can, I think, still find on YouTube, where it's just like clearly somebody that's like living in a depressing ass place like Russia, just having some fun, like making people look miserable in pencil. So yeah, there was, I like, basically what kept me going in this game was really just the drive to find out where it's going next and how much weirder it gets. And I was pretty satisfied with how much the game breaks down towards the end. And then I got to the end and realized that this is not a complete game. There's got to be more to it, because the ending is kind of a non-ending. So, therefore,
I wonder if a sequel's planned or something.
Yeah, I don't know. Elsewhere on the internet, I saw that there was, it was like, it's part of a planned trilogy, but I don't know much about it. So, because it's so new, it's hard to say. And that was just based off the Steam release from before, a couple of years before, I think. So, yeah. Well, oh, and the other thing is that there's almost no soundtrack at all. It's all ambient noise. There's a couple of little things that sound like somebody's just tuning a guitar. It doesn't actually sound like a song. It's just like a note that goes up and down. That's kind of the other thing, is like, don't go in expecting much in the way of a soundtrack. You're going to be playing this while doing other things, listening to other things, I'm sure.
Hear that, or it's just uncomfortable for the ambiance.
I guess so, yeah.
Maybe. But overall, $5 on this one, what do you think?
Well, I find it hard to recommend it to anybody but those particular folks who really like things that are weird and messed up, and they don't mind that it's a kind of really simplistic, you know, point and click that doesn't take very long to beat. You know, if you're into that, then $5, sure, you know, go and, you know, have yourself a bad time, but you know, that the kind of bad time you're looking for. For general fans of point and clicks, I'd say no, it's too simple. And it's frustratingly awkwardly written. For everybody else, I'm like, well, look at a video and see if you like it. Cause you know, if you see it and you don't like what you see.
It's a unique look.
It's unique. it's unique, and you know, clearly this it was all done by choice. I mean, there's no possible way this person set about to make a game that looks like this on accident. So, but yeah, if you're a fan of weirdness and bleakness, then yes, this is the game for you for $5.
Awesome. Sounds good. Well, we got one final game to talk about tonight. That is called One Finger Death Punch 2, developed and published by Silver Dollar Games. It released February 26th on Xbox One and Switch for $8.99. The world's fastest brawler is back. Experience cinematic kung fu in the most epic stickman fighter ever made. Staying true to the original, you can play with only two buttons. Every press matters. Do not button mash. Purnell, tell us about One Finger Death Punch 2.
Well, there's a little bit of a secret I have to reveal here, which is that I've been playing the game the entire episode. So there's that. This is the prime example of one of those games where I had no intention of enjoying it. I thought it would be one of those like rinky dink little games where you just kind of putz around with it for a few minutes, then you're just kind of done with it. It's like, eh, not fun. I was wrong. This game is simple as hell, and yet it's how it uses that simplicity to its advantage that makes it oh so great. You are a stick figure man. You're standing in the middle of the screen. Enemies come from the left and the right, and your goal is when an enemy comes within range on either the left side or the right side of the screen, you have to press either X or B, representing left and right, respectively. That, in turn, sends your stick figure man to the opposing enemy who's rushing him, and then knocks him the hell out. Of course, if that was all the game was, it would be even simpler than it actually is, and that would be kind of bland and boring. But the way they make this work into a more robust game is that there are a variety of different scenarios when you're playing it. So, for example, you might come across a guy that'll be running on the screen where when you attack him, he'll actually, like, instead of just knocking him out, he'll actually go to the other side. So it's like, so it ends up becoming a matter of, like, hitting left side. Okay, now he dodged and went to the right. Hit the right button. He dodges that and goes back to the left one again. So you'll be, like, doing, like, these weird combinations where you have to, like, kind of follow along with, like, hit the combination of ones you have to hit to knock the guy out. Some enemies are considered boss enemies, and when they show up, they'll have a combination of different effects you have to perform in sequence. You have to hit a combination of buttons, then go down this sequence where the X and B buttons are falling from the top of the screen. You have to hit them before they hit the bottom, and when they're done, he gets knocked out. It's just a lot of different ways to hit X and B to knock dudes out. You don't even use the cross pad while you play. But my God, is it freaking entertaining. The music is spectacular while this is all going on. Every once in a while, a weapon will fall down or an enemy will drop it and you'll rush. You can push the button, just like the attack buttons, to run over and pick one of them up. And then you start attacking with those weapons. Some of them are just visual flair related. Other times, the weapons may actually like have like special properties, like kill enemies with one hit, even if they take multiple hits to go down. There are scenarios where enemies are firing bullets and weapons from off the side of the screen, and you have to press the button when the attack comes into range to dodge the weapon or deflect the weapon or catch the weapon, which you can then use to throw at another guy. Sometimes if you dodge the weapon, you'll go under it, it'll go past you and kill the guy that's coming at you from the other direction. And it is all just visually spectacular. And sometimes you'll trigger special attacks too, which will have, they kind of work kind of like how a summon would work in certain games where, you know, you'll be doing like your normal combo and then all of a sudden you'll start breakdancing. A breakdancing woman will fall down from the top of the screen and it'll be called an auto attack and you'll start just breakdancing for a couple of seconds, killing guys automatically. This game is stupidly fun. And then they offer multiple ways to do the exact same freaking thing across multiple modes. There's a mode where you're fighting guys from the left and the right side of the screen like you always do, and then a giant cat just pops up on the screen to obstruct your view, and you have to just fight around the cat. This game is stupidly fun. Dude,
I live with that mode.
Exactly. You live with it. I don't have a cat, so I was able to kind of get a sample of what it's like to have a cat with this game. And again, I don't think any of your cats are as big as this cat is, because it took up an entire 55-inch screen. It was ridiculous. And then you unlock skills by getting skill points on the main mode, which is like a level mode where you go across world maps and there's like hubs on the world map where you can enter them and perform complete stages and of course go for perfect 5-star ratings, not 3 stars, 5 stars. I haven't had to say it in a long time, actually. I haven't done a 3-star game in ages. But yeah, you can get like 5-star ratings on the different levels, and some of the levels will let you unlock skill points, which can be used to unlock various skills. Now, being that this is a simple-ass game, these skills aren't complicated. It's simple things like it allows you to trigger different special attacks like the breakdancing girl, or you might catch it. It might allow you to use, like, get more bullets in the gun that you might catch on the stage or something like that. So, like, weapons will have more bullets in them. You might get a move where every once in a while you'll kill a boss automatically when he runs out at you. And other things. So just a bunch of different random things just to kind of augment the game to make it a little easier to progress, because it does get pretty hard.
Oh, it gets really hard.
Oh, yeah. Like, you got enemies coming at you, like, ridiculously fast. They start combining all the stuff I mentioned earlier in massive waves. So you'll have guys rushing at you while you have bullets coming from the left, shuriken coming from the right, and you're, like, trying to figure out, am I deflecting or am I dodging these things? Because, of course, the other thing that I didn't mention that's very important is that you don't want to miss. And by miss, I mean you don't want to press X or B when there isn't something in range for you to press it in reaction to. Because if you do that, your character will stumble, you will be stunned for a second, and it leaves you wide open to taking a hit. And in those sequences like what I mentioned earlier, if you screw it up, oh, they're going to beat the tar out of you, and it sucks. So you will kind of find yourself in this weird scenario where you just kind of get into a zone, like, wah, 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 wah. And then it made me realize something. This is a rhythm game without the rhythm. As far as, like,
pretty much,
like, there's no song playing that you're tapping to the beat to, but you get into a rhythm of this thing, and next thing you know, you're not even really all that concerned about the enemy. You're just looking at their little indicators at the bottom of the screen, or literally reacting to just how the light works. Like, I don't know how else to describe this, but to say, I get to a point when I zone out, and I'm not focusing on the enemies running in me anymore. I just look for, like, I just kind of, like, look down, and I catch light glimpses from the screen, like a flicker. And when the flicker happens, I just know, press the button, press the button, press the button. I'm not even really looking at the actual visual flare anymore. It's crazy. And that's not even a bad thing. That just goes to show you just how the game ends up working. If you're watching someone play this game, at least early on, before you, like, get tired of seeing the same stuff, it looks amazing, because the animation of the stick figure man rushing back and forth, knocking dudes down, this and destroying buildings and scenery. It's, they took a really simple concept and made it spectacular. This is a game that shouldn't even exist to me. this shouldn't be this enjoyable to me. But like I said, this episode, we've been recording for over an hour, and I have been playing it the entire time.
Did you ever play the original, Cole? Did you ever play the original on Xbox 360 indie games?
No, I didn't. I missed out on it.
Same here, unfortunately. This is my first time playing it. And for the reason that you'd expect, I didn't think this would be a game I'd want to play, because I'm like, oh, there's one button press, and, you know, whatever, I don't care. So I'll be honest,
like, I really enjoyed the original game, but Silver Dollar Games in the 360 Xbox Live indie arcade days, they seemed to just shovel everything out and throw anything at the wall to see what stuck. And they just struck gold with this one. The original game was an absolute blast. It's awesome to see them refine it and rework it and give it, like, real visual flair, and just how over the top they made all the animations. Mm-hmm. It's really cool to see the progress that Silver Dollar Games made from those 360 indie game days to what this is now.
So this was originally a 360 game, not this one, but, you know, I mean, the prequel.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
The indie game. Remember the indie game section that doesn't exist anymore?
I missed that section. There was a lot of games like Arhito Jump. I remember loving that game.
Yep.
But, like, yeah, like, this, they knocked it out of the park with this freaking thing. Though I will say, despite the fact that I've been playing for an hour and a half, or at least today, as in, like, right now, I will say that I think this game is intended to be played in increments. You don't want to sit there and just, like, play it for a while, because, again, it's a one-note style of gameplay. Hit the dudes on the left, hit the dudes on the right, go into your rhythm zone. But with that said, it is perfect for that. You play a couple rounds, you put it down, you come back, maybe you do the mode with the cat in front of the TV, or you do the challenge tower, or you do the mode where you're like, there's like tiles that you want to go land on, and when you do go to the tile, you perform a level, and then you can choose where to move next for like a little board game thing. It's just fun. You'll play it for a bit, get your reflex fix in, turn it off, come back later. But it's a spectacular product. I think it is a game that you wouldn't expect to be worth your money, but it is absolutely worth the cost of admission. and you will get tons of joy out of it. And even if you feel as though, oh, $9 is too much right now, if it goes on sale, get it then. Point is, it's worth money. It's worth your time, and it's worth your enjoyment, because you will enjoy it.
So then for $9, your verdict is?
I think it's a total buy. An unexpected yet total buy.
Awesome.
Prime.
Now, I don't know if he's in chat anymore. Friggin' awesome. If you are interested in One Finger Death Punch 2 and you can't afford it, keep an eye on our Twitter because we're going to be doing a giveaway soon. So, ooh, yeah, probably next week. So keep an eye on our Twitter and look for how to enter and win yourself some free shit.
You might be able to enter with one finger.
Nah.
Ooh, maybe. Wow. Anyway, that is it for this episode. It's been a long one. Well, it's been long compared to what we've been lately. We're not even at 3 hours. This is like bullshit numbers. That's like nothing, man.
Bullshit good short. Or bullshit bad?
We can handle it. Like, God, let's see. This section is like an hour 28 before any kind of editing. So that'll probably cut it down to like 125, 124. Tim's section was, how long is his section? Let's see. 45 minutes. See, that's nothing. We got plenty of time to kill. How's everyone doing?
Pretty good.
You want short episodes. What the heck? I thought you wanted short episodes. You're trying to extend it on your own now. What are you doing?
Keep you fuckers here with me. I love the company. But yeah, aww, that is it for this episode. Thanks, everyone, for coming in, hanging out. Thanks to Tim for being here, doing his reviews earlier. Thanks to Aki for being here and chatting with us about Darksiders. Thanks to the three of y'alls as well for being here. Cole, do you have any final words to end the show?
Fucking nope.
Okay, let's go. Chris, do you have any final words to end the show?
No.
Fucking
hell. Missed opportunity. It was supposed to be fucking nope. We were all supposed to say fucking nope. We're not Aki. We don't carry it on for 3 hours after we stop.
Pernell, final words?
Fucking yeah!
Mm-hmm.